Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, if you've been following our Search for Intimacy series over the last few weeks, you'll know that human sexuality is something that, number one, God built into humankind from the very beginning. It's actually a reflection of his own intimate nature. Secondly, that marriage is a safe place he designed for us to enjoy that sexuality, because take it out of its boundaries, then it can actually be destructive. Tonight we're going to explore this notion of marriage a little bit further. Last week we talked about virginity and just how it wasn't just a simple case of, you know, not having sex. It was actually a real worldview, a real mindset of being set apart, being off the market until that special person comes along. Well, tonight we're going to explore what marriage actually is. Then Dr. Alan Meyer is the author of the Search for Intimacy Life Keys course, which has been run in so many churches around the nation, is helping and healing so many people. Good to have you back, Alan.
Thanks, mate. It's really good to be with you again.
Boy, this is thought-provoking stuff. It really is. Our first session together a number of weeks ago now, we looked at the origins of sex, and we did what, you know, a theology, you know, a Christian understanding of what sex is. Yeah. Let's do the same thing with marriage. We've touched on a few points over the last few weeks already, but the fact is that marriage is not just simply both of your signatures on a piece of paper to say, all right, we've got a legal binding agreement. It's so much more than that.
Yes, the old word in Hebrew for covenant is the word berit. It had three concepts attached to it: a cutting, a binding, and an eating. This is the core, I guess, of what marriage is about. First of all, it's a cutting in the sense that something has to die. In the Bible, one of the things that people can find fairly confronting is the fact that the idea of sacrifice. But the reality is this: it's simply true in every area of life that without a death, life is not possible. Mm-hmm. You cannot grow a crop if you don't plant a seed. Except a seed falls into the ground and dies, it abides alone. It's also true in human relationships. When you've got a young man, an older man, who has a life and a will and a desire and dreams and all of that kind of stuff, has a desire to form a family, the reality is this: he's going to need to bring his single life and join it together with another single life. And the only way that is possible is if a young woman and a young man are prepared to confront the issue of things dying. All covenants begin with in an agreement where both sides are prepared to say, some of my rights are about to die. Mm-hmm. It's why peace agreements between nations are so hard to forge, because the first point is I'm laying down some of my prerequisites or some of the issues that are important to me. If I don't do that, no peace agreement is possible. And because everybody wants to live, everybody wants to have their own way, it becomes impossible to create a real bond or a real relationship. Now, the way we mess it up in modern society is this: people just go straight to the eating. They say, well, we don't want to do marriage. You know, we just want to have, we just like each other. So we're going to set up a home. We're going to move into that house and we're going to start having sex together and doing life together. We'll just move straight to the eating part. We're going to avoid the cutting and we're not going to do the binding part. We're not going to make agreements. Well, if we had the time, I would love to do a session with you where you look at the de facto relationship and what it means for children, what it means for the frequency of women ending up in women's refuges, what it means in terms of physical damage and insecurity. The tragedy is you can't just jump straight to the eating. If you want to have a great relationship, you want to build a great family, you want to raise great kids, somebody is going to die. So in marriage, you confront that up right up front. And you realize that as a young man and a young woman are going to make a commitment to live life together, the young man is saying to her, up to this point in my life, I've had my own choices, my own money, my own will, my own way. I go out when I want, I come home when I want, and I do what I want. But I'm laying that on the altar today. A young woman says, up to this point in time, I've had my own hours, my own time, my own body, my own money, my own will, my own way. I come and go whenever I like. But for the sake of us building a family, I put that on the altar today. And in Old Testament, in the Old Covenant, the way they would do that, the way they would symbolize that, was that they would take animals and cut them in half. Now, that's pretty gruesome. And they would pull the parts of the animal apart, and you'd virtually form a bloody aisleway where there'd be animals separated and blood all over the ground. And the partners to an agreement, whether it was a business agreement or a marriage, it wouldn't matter what it was, they would arm in arm walk their way between the divided animals. And this is what they would be saying. I realise that if we're going to have a binding agreement, it begins with both of us laying down our rights. Mm. So that's the cutting part. Then, having walked down that aisleway between those divided animals, they would arm in arm make commitments to one another. And I stood with a little girl in 1968, and I held her hand, and I said to her, forsaking all others and cleaving only unto you, in sickness and in health, for richer, for poorer, for better, for worse, till death us do part. I made a commitment to that girl. She made a commitment to me. That's the binding part. Mm-hmm. Then out of that comes the eating. Out of that then comes the joy of being able to strip each other naked, enjoy each other in bed, shower together, wake up together, raise children together, pay bills together, face the world together. But it began with both of us laying our lives down and making commitments mm-hmm. that we will never break. Mm-hmm. And out of that is we've built something fantastic. You want to have a great relationship? Find a person who's prepared to say to you, I'd lay my life down for you. Mm-hmm. And you look them back in the eye and say, you know what? I'd lay my life down for you too. And that's essentially what marriage is. It's a covenant in which there's firstly a laying aside of rights, secondly a commitment, and then out of that comes the joy of life, relationships, sex, and all of the stuff that a great relationship or a great marriage is built on.
Yeah. This is Open House Across the Nation. Alan Meyer is with us. We're walking our way through the Search for Intimacy series we've been doing on sexuality from a Christian perspective. Two scenarios, Alan, I want you to touch on, because these are quite prevalent at the moment. Number one scenario is this, and this is particularly, I'm thinking actually in light of Christians looking at marriage right now. I occasionally come across a couple who are actually sleeping together, even though they are Christians and they, you know, probably think that they shouldn't be, but they say this, well, you know, we're going to get married sometime. We're committed to each other and weddings are awfully expensive. You know, we're just kind of, you know, holding off until we've got enough money for the actual big day. But, you know, it's got to be okay, hasn't it? We're committed to each other. Your response to a couple who would actually, you know, say that?
Prove it. Prove it. What are you waiting for? You feel you're ready for sexual intimacy? Then make the commitment, mate. What are you waiting for? A certain amount of money in the bank? When Helen and I married, we had $40 between us. When we married, we were still concluding our university degrees and heading off into our careers. We had nothing. We lived with our mum and dad for the first 18 months while we were concluding our studies.
There you go.
And then went out and built something. I think that is, it's saying that I can't make a commitment until I've got all my ducks in a row. Then take your hand off that woman. You have no idea at this point whether you will honour that. You say you will, you may not even live long enough to fulfil it. And if you persist in doing this, what you're doing is not only underlining to yourselves that you can eat the fruit of marriage without paying the price tag of true commitment, you may not even be able to fulfill that. And then you'll leave a broken-hearted person trying to rebuild a life after you have departed and left your fingerprints all over their soul.
Mm. You would have seen countless couples, and I have too, who've actually said that, and it didn't actually work out.
Exactly
so,
right.
So true. The second scenario is for the Christian couple who aren't married, but they're in a place together, and temptation struck, and they fell, they slept together, and now they say, well, we've slept together, we've got to get married.
Wow. No, that's not enough. That is not enough to build a marriage on. And at that point, you need some counselling, because we're about to talk about what it does take to make a marriage last for a lifetime. And if you have made a mistake, acknowledge the mistake, but don't make a second one, or a more permanent one, on the basis of the first one. Deal with the mistake you've made, and then begin to act with more integrity.
Okay, well, what does make a marriage then? When it comes to finding that person, I love those 3 points you covered with us about the, you know, the death and then the binding and then the eating.
Yeah.
What else does it take?
Well, first of all, it does take a certain kind of character to get married. And I think when I'm counselling young men and women, I want them to spend more time preparing for a marriage than they do for a wedding. Because this is the sad thing about, again, modern society. Modern society spends more time preparing for a wedding than they do for a marriage. There will be an immense amount of time put into printing invitations and where will we be and what will we wear and what will we do, and not an ounce of preparation for what kind of a human being can actually make a marriage work. Mm. And that's where you've got to focus. There are elements of preparation. You need to develop the ability to honour other people, the ability to have an inner strength that deals with challenges without running away. You need to develop the capacity to express selflessness. If you don't have that, you can't afford to be married because you're gonna damage someone. You need to have developed the skills of gratitude, to practice integrity, to have the character to be able to manage the challenges that marriage throws your way. And so my real challenge to young people is not, have you found the right person to get married? Are you fit to be married? I mean, do you have the character to be married? And that means developing the kind of character and personality that would allow you to get married.
Now, just a point on that, though. To what degree should those character traits be present in, say, a 20-year-old who's about to make that kind of commitment? To what degree can we expect somebody to have all those characteristics?
Well, you won't have them in the maturity that you hope that you'll have them as you grow, but they should be identifiable.
Okay.
You know, the capacity to be selfless, the capacity to face a challenge. And even at the age of 16 or 17, you can see in a maturing teenager these developing capacities for life. To marry someone who doesn't have them is to condemn yourself to a relationship that will break your heart. And often the sad thing is that people get married and say, oh, I'll change him or I'll change her. Man, you need to walk into marriage saying, even if nothing ever changes from where they are today, if nothing ever improves, I could make a lifetime relationship last with this person. Mm. Then it comes to the question of what am I really looking for? I give kids 5 tests, and I say to them, there are 5 tests that you really need to examine your own heart for, and have someone who will help you run these tests as well, before you make a commitment to marry. The first we call the proof of the heart, and that is that you really long to be with this person. There's a passage in the Bible that says it is God who is in you both to will and to do of his good pleasure. Mm-hmm. And if God is drawing you together with another person, there will be in your heart a desire for it. See, God doesn't just impose his will on people. He works in people and with people to develop their desire and their vision for life.
Yeah.
And so that needs to be the first issue. The second one I call the proof of the Spirit, and that is it's not easy for people who don't pray to understand what that's about. But there's been more than one situation in life where I have had a personal desire and then I've held it before God and said, Lord, what do you think about this? Yeah. And the more I've done that, the more I've realized that my personal desire is not really helpful. You know, don't go down this pathway. Yeah. It's like in my soul, there's a ship sinking. It's a sense that you may really want it, but you're not going to be as happy as you think you are if you get what you want.
Yeah, the heart is not enough, isn't it? Because our hearts can actually lead us astray. Sometimes they can actually guide us in the wrong direction. We need God's prompting as well.
Yeah, there's a great line out of that movie, Fireproof. Great line in which the guy says, don't follow your heart, mate, lead your heart.
Yes.
And I think it's a great thought that if you think you're just going to follow your heart, sometimes your heart tells lies to you.
It does.
And you don't want to follow a liar everywhere you go. But here's the third one. I think the third one becomes really significant. Called the proof of mathematics. I love what Johnny Ortiz from Argentina once said. My mother told me that a great marriage is good feelings and good mathematics. See, the fact is, a marriage is a relationship where a man and a woman harness themselves, they yoke their economics, they yoke their geography, they yoke their family connections. All of this stuff has to come together. And the question is, does it make any sense? Now, let me give you another Bible verse, because, you know, again, here's an ancient piece of wisdom. You shall not plow a field with an ox and a donkey together. Mm-hmm. Now, that's ancient wisdom. You want to plow a field? You want to put a yoke on? Get two oxen in there, or get two donkeys in there. But don't put an ox with a donkey, because one of them's going to get badly injured. They can't help each other. They just don't work well together. And so you've got to ask the question, do we have what it takes to build a lifetime of raising kids, paying bills, mowing lawns, resolving conflict? Do we have what it takes? And I give young people a whole list of questions. When it comes to our faith and our worldview, could they work together? When we look at what we think we're alive to accomplish, could that work together? When we look at our careers, where we hope to be able to expend our energies and the work we desire to do, could that work together? When we look at our view of family life and the kind of family we've come from, does this experience and view of family, will that work together? What about our intelligence? I think my big sister's marriage failed, at least in part, because she was a university-trained librarian. And he departed school in year 9 doing a tech thing at Sunshine TAFE. And not that it couldn't have worked, but the intelligence factor was significant. And at the end, when he hated her because she was more intelligent than he was. And she wouldn't swallow a lot of the stupid things he would say. And he became violent over that. And a lot of that could have been just that they did not match in terms of intelligence. What about social bearing? What about your emotional makeup? Do you guys have the resilience and the capacity to deal with each other emotionally for a lifetime? Sometimes people have a fragility about them and the other person doesn't have the resilience to cope with that. Well, that's a disaster. How do you handle your finances? What do you like to do with your recreation? What are your friendships and your family ties like? How do you view bearing and raising children? How do you manage your living space? What are your views on sex? And all of these, I'd call them mathematics. Now, you're not going to do that yourself. You really need some wise counsel, like the Enrich Prepare, but even more than that, people like a counselor or a pastor who does a lot of marriage preparation. Let them sit with you before you're at the point of signing contracts on houses and tying your life together financially. Have someone run the plumb line over the sanity of this relationship. Does it make any sense? They say this, that if you do good marriage preparation, 3 out of 10 engagements will not continue. That's the statistics on this. So that you'll have 30% of the couples who think they're ready to get married, if they do really good marriage preparation, will discover they don't have what it takes to make this relationship work.
And that'll be a good thing.
It'll be a very good thing, because a little bit of pain in the short term can set you up for a lifetime of happiness. Then the final two, I say, what are your parents and those who really know you, like your uncles, your pastors, what do they really think of this relationship? I wish my sister had asked my dad, Dad, what do you think?
Yeah.
Dad, is he the right guy? Because he would have said, sweetheart, I don't think so. She could have saved herself a lifetime of pain. And finally, for those who follow Jesus, I think there's one called the proof of discipleship. Does your relationship want to make you walk with Jesus and fulfill a magnificent life's calling? Or does it kind of tend to make you want to care less and less about the way you honor God?
Yeah. Well, I reckon we've got an instant marriage prep course just in the last 20 minutes there. Alan, fantastic stuff. Thanks so much. And next week, when we kind of wrap up this series, we're going to look at the whole issue of healing. I mean, for some listening, they're going to say, okay, I've been listening the last few weeks and I know. I've crossed the line. I've breached the boundaries and I know that I'm actually suffering for it. The next question obviously is, well, how can we have redemption? How can we be healed from some of those scars? So be looking forward to catching up with you again next week.
I'll be here.
Yeah, I bet you will be. Alan Meyer, who's the director of CareForce Life Keys, run a number of courses, including this Search for Intimacy course. If you want to know more, careforcelifekeys.org is his website.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.